So we're solving for two distinct group of people. We're solving a very core issue. So the first group, and that's the group that I came from, is the crypto investors themselves, most of which actually have a high degree of their net worth in crypto assets. And so it's a high volatility that they're exposed to. So by creating asset classes that are connected with real cash flows and balance sheets, I'm reducing the risk profile for them and allowing them to invest in something that is more stable. The second group of people is family offices and retail investors that live outside the United States, outside of Europe, but they want to invest into US dollar denominated or euro denominated asset classes that have some kind of return. And mostly, actually, there's a high degree of hurdles that they have to jump through in order to successfully do that. Either it's money logistics or legal logistics or simple fact that they actually have to bring a high degree of capital before they actually can qualify. We can break that down. We can make that more fragmented. We can standardize that using blockchain, both from the investor qualification processes and just the simple ownership processes of how to invest. And so ultimately, it's beyond a cash collapse, meaning sort of, you know, you get rid of a whole bunch of fees of middlemen. It's also a new liquidity of a new investor base that normally wouldn't invest in these kind of things.
Well, so, and the second group,
so let's assume for the first group of people, meaning sort of the crypto investors, yeah. There is $180 billion at this point in time as market cap. This is all crypto. Let's assume that there's
Bitcoin and Ether.
Well, Bitcoin is $100 billion of that, and Ether is basically another like 40 something billion of that, okay. Right?
And the rest are combination.
Yeah, and then there's the long tail falling off as a result of that, right? So if you think that actually your portfolio should be geared more towards security, you may look at maybe 20, at the beginning 20 or 30% to be put into something that is properly de-risked. So take 20 to 30%, that's already, you know, $40 to $60 billion that actually is potentially wanting to go in this direction.
Like,
so give you an example, the first fund that we're actually sort of going to launch in January is a fund that actually invests into pre-IPO tech stocks. So very significantly de-risked tech companies that have their own brand, well-known, they're shortly before, you know, becoming IPO candidates, and people can invest in that kind of value. That market in itself in the United States is $55 billion annually. So matching up these two streams of, you know, someone that wants to deploy capital, yep, and there's a huge sink of capital that actually, yes, has a very, very well-defined risk profile, that's the market we're going after.
Right.
It is huge, yeah. So the family offices, in their normal deployment of capital, they actually sort of, they would like to go into these high return asset classes. The problem is that they have a lot of things they have to go through to make that happen. You know, there's money logistics, there's legal logistics, they have to get deal flow. Once they're invested, it's actually a very long time that they have to bind their capital in that. And lastly, it is not even clear whether they actually formally can, right? So by going through this mechanism, we can allow them to actually get some exposure at whatever level they want to and make that very cheap to engage. So, and by the way, this doesn't stop at family offices. It doesn't have to be the wealthy. Quite to the contrary, the retail investor has the same thing. So if you're a $5 investor from Indonesia, why don't you get access to these kind of opportunities? And that is mostly because you don't have enough say in dealing with the counterparts that run these alternative investments. We've been on this part of the question where we've been dealing with already for 2 years and building actually sort of legal technology and sort of procedural processes that allow us to be compliant with different legislations. So we basically, you know, we've been sort of dealing with sort of through our legal counsel as well as other institutions with just understanding better what the SEC and other institutions in the United States actually are asking, but even beyond that. So to answer the question, we constructed actually sort of a two-layered token sphere, one of which is purely the governance of the software company, which is Swarm as a foundation that builds all the software that is deployed into managing these funds. The second token sphere is actually the asset-backed token spheres, where we're creating a standard of how alternative investments can describe themselves and be regulatory compliant. And that's an off-chain marketplace that actually needs to abide by AML, KYC, investor accreditation, etc. And so we have defined neural points in that whenever someone comes into the marketplace and wants to invest into one of those asset-backed tokens and then takes the money out, there are different points where you have to apply these checks. And that is happening obviously in a controlled marketplace that you can then actually check first before you let people transact.
Right.
Let me answer first why there's the reason that actually people look very critically to ICOs. And I think the predominant one is actually there's a lot of Ponzi schemes, there's a lot of noise that actually shouldn't pitch this. So there's a you need to defraud the marketplace, and every regulator looking at that is doing the right job to protect actually investors, retail investors mostly, from having downfalls there, right? So you basically there's a safeguarding function that is a result of that. Secondly, the criticism is that people are trying to evade securities laws. So some of these are clearly securities, but they try to depict it as if they're not. So we're not even trying to do that. We're trying to actually bring out a marketplace that actually will have securities on them.
Right.
Meaning that we're going to be compliant with local securities laws wherever that legislation is. It will have actually the proper check processes in place and so forth. So these mini ICOs of the asset-backed tokens are actually securities that just happen to be traded through a token mechanism. So in a way, we're trying to be like cutting through the red tape in a more proactive way by actually bringing the market towards that direction and making the participants actually transact in the regulatory compliant way. And then, although we probably are pushing the limits on many fronts, we're trying to do it by tying into a conversation with the regulators at the same time. So we obviously, again, the architecture benefits that tremendously, where we, with our council, we've been working diligently to actually make sure that our governance token, which is the Swarm token, is actually purely as utility, and we've been qualified as such. Still, we are qualifying investors and accrediting them, and this is sort of belt and suspenders. You have to be sure that although you know that you have flexibility, the eventuality down the road that something might be differently, actually we're trying to prepare for that and still have everything in place when the time would be needed to. So yeah, we're selling a token into the market that is clearly defined, that has been defined as not a security, and the outflow of the money actually builds software or has sort of software built that is being taken to market that basically creates a landscape of securities tokens down below. Very exciting. I think one of my criticisms personally for some of the ICOs is that with the moment of the ICO, the music stops. And we're consciously trying to do that differently. Number one, we've built product before. Number two, we've actually built business relationships that are coming to market, and we've announced some of them. And number three, we have a very clearly defined time frame. So by early first quarter of next year, we'll actually have the marketplace launched with the first one or two funds actually being listed there. So the sort of the real impact on the ecosystem will take place tangibly right away after this. So the first immediate action though is that we're actually putting a liquidity democracy vote to place right after the sale closes, where the participants and the members can vote on how this concept should function. So specifically the token behavior. And so we're putting our money where the mouth is. Well, you could consider every one of the underlying tokens to be its own ICO, where that's not the right description. It's actually a token release that is then promoted into whoever wants to invest into it. But it's less described as an ICO, but it's more like it's just a token availability on the market, and obviously there's marketing around it, but it's not with pre-sales. It's not the typical way that people look at ICOs.